To the news this morning that suicide bombers had struck again, but this time not in Israel. No, this time the target was Westerners living in Saudi Arabia, a hotbed of Islamic fundamentalism. U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell said the attack, which killed at least 10 Americans and another 10 Westerners, bore all the hallmarks of an Al-Qaeda operation. It'll be interesting to hear the opinions of my next guest, who could have been responsible for this and other terrorist activities around the world. David Icke, in his book Alice in Wonderland and the World Trade Center Disaster, pours scorn on the idea that Osama bin Laden and his henchmen were responsible for September the 11th. David, welcome to the studio.
Hello, James.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm a bit
You look very
actually.
Good, actually.
Do you?
Yes, you look good.
Me,
you look good. Yeah, no, excellent. Well, let's start with there. Do you think that this latest atrocity today had anything to do with Al-Qaeda?
Well, it's a big story, and increasingly a blatantly obvious one. There is an agenda to take over the Middle East and move on through North Korea and eventually have a situation with China. These are not my words. These are from a document that was produced for the Bush gang, before they came illegally to power. It was published in September 2000 by an organization called the New American Century. And in there, it talks about using Iraq. First of all, it talks about the need for this situation we have now with America taking over the Middle East and the Gulf. And it says that the situation with Saddam Hussein provides the, quote, immediate justification to do it. It talks about Syria, it talks about Iran, it talks about North Korea, and it talks about, as I've been talking in my books for years about, eventually having a conflict with China. Now, all these things are there, and the people who created this organization, the project for the New American Century, are the very same people, James, who are now running the Bush administration. Cheney, Wolfowitz, the deputy defense secretary, Rumsfeld, Jeb Bush, the president's brother. These are the people that are actually behind an organization that produced a blueprint, which is now unfolding. Now, what else did it say? It said that this takeover would be slow, this is in September 2000, would be slow unless America had, quote, another Pearl Harbor.
Did America, are Americans privy to this information? I mean, a lot of these theories are abound, but you often wonder whether Americans themselves ever get to read anything like this.
Well, that's a good point, because I've spent a lot of time in America over the last few years. And when I first went, I'm starting to get a little bit immune to it now, but when I first went, I was staggered at the lack of foreign news. If it's not in some way affecting America directly, you don't hear it. You know, when people watch CNN and things like that in Europe, that's not what, that's not the CNN the Americans get. And therefore, they are cocooned.
The amazing thing about that is, you know, the biggest thing in the world, right, is soccer. Well, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't touch the Americans at all.
Well, they're getting a bit better at it now.
You sent David Beckham over to America,
yeah,
and they would just, he could walk down the street in America and they wouldn't wonder.
Right, well, they're getting a bit better at it now. I mean, their women are very good. But the point is, at football, I mean.
Well, no, they're very good anyway.
They're very good anyway, yeah.
Let me just before we move on, let me just remind those of you who like to do this sort of thing that if you want to check out David's website while you're listening to the program, you can do that. www.davidicke.com. David, D-I-V-I-D-I-C-K-E, all one word. And you can check it out there.
I don't know what the C's doing there, you know. I never did work that out.
Well, didn't, no, I don't know.
That's why people call me Icky and things like that.
Yeah. Did you? But they have to put that in to get to the website.
Yeah, they do.
Okay. All right, so the conspiracy theory surrounding September 11th, first of all. So this was
as far as you're concerned, this was the Pearl Harbor that motivated America to move on the Middle East.
What did Bush call it? He called it our Pearl Harbor.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask, what I find difficult to understand, is coming from this angle. Today we saw, I think if you've watched any of the news today, we saw some of the most horrific pictures of bodies being exhumed from mass graves.
Right.
15,000 more from this one site. Women with newborn children clung to their chests who'd just been clubbed to death or whatever.
Yeah, we would have seen a lot of that in the last few weeks as a result of British and American bombing as well.
Yeah, but this was, I mean, this is just showing what Saddam was like. I mean, he obviously was somebody that we needed to get rid of, do you think?
Well, you see, if we look at things in a black and white fashion, we're going to lose the plot because the truth is a serious shade of grey. Yes, of course, Saddam Hussein was a vicious dictator, but who put him there?
Mm.
As the CIA had to admit, it's appeared in papers like the Wall Street Journal over the years, it was a CIA-supported coup that put Saddam Hussein in there. He was the blue-eyed boy of the Americans right the way through the 1980s, right up to the invasion of Kuwait. In 1983, Donald Rumsfeld went to Baghdad. There's a picture of it. Shook hands with Saddam, and he went there as documents from the State Department that have come to light in this year have confirmed. He went there for the Reagan-Bush administration to arrange for the supply of chemical and biological weapons, including bubonic plague, to Saddam to use against Iran in the Iran-Iraq war. Now, we hear this stuff. Oh, hey, what about the Kurds? He gassed the Kurds. Terrible. What did he do it with? The very chemical weapons that were supplied by people like Rumsfeld, Reagan, and Father Bush. Now, one other point about Rumsfeld. How many people realize that he is a director of a company called ABB, a German company based out of, comes out of Zurich, I think, that in the year 2000 supplied North Korea with nuclear technology. 2 years later, a director of that company, as defense secretary, is pointing to that technology and saying, we've got to sort North Korea out. What I'm saying to you, James, is there's two things going on here. There is the agenda for the global conquest, and it's a global fascist state which we're hurtling towards, a centralized global dictatorship. And then there is the movie that is designed to provide the excuses for that agenda to unfold. This is why you get the same people who are supplying to create the problem, and then in the movie version saying, look what they have, we must remove them. So yes, what country wants to be led by a Saddam Hussein? But what's happened here? We've replaced one dictatorship with another. That's all we have. The Americans were, and the British were never going to get out of Iraq as they said they were.
The United Nations are not going to be able to force America and Britain to do anything now.
Well, no, but I mean, let me just give you one or two things from this report that I'm talking about, which are extremely relevant to current events. This report says that in this conquest, in this takeover, it's going to be very effective to use key allies such as the United Kingdom. This would be the most effective and efficient means of exercising American global leadership, it says, exactly what they're doing. And in referring to your question here, it says that peacekeeping missions demand American political leadership rather than that of the United Nations. And so we're now in a situation where the United Nations is just looking on and being dictated to by, in effect, those that are controlling Washington. Who's controlling Washington? The architects of reports like this. This is a very long plan. Now,
how did you get hold of the report, David?
This actually appeared in the media. The Sunday Herald in Scotland got hold of it, but it's appeared in other papers also. And they're not denying that this report exists. And you look at the people that have been behind the war, including people like Richard Perle, and they're all connected to this network that produced the blueprint. And like I say, it says this is going to be very slow unless we have another Pearl Harbor. September the 11th, 2001, came the very Pearl Harbor event, without which none of this stuff that has followed, the invasion of Afghanistan, the invasion of Iraq, and all these other things that are going on, the destructions of basic freedoms, really basic freedoms.
Can we stop this happening? Can we stop the way this world is going? I mean, let me leave you to ponder that question and just move ourselves right the way back and talk a bit about you and then come forward.
Well, I've got me a cup of coffee now. I can wake up.
You can wake up now. We've spoken many times.
Yeah.
Right from the time after, of course, I wrote when you had all the problems, when people were accusing you of saying you were the son of God and all that sort of stuff, which now you seem to manage to put behind you.
Well, there's a lot more to that. But
sure,
anyway,
I know. But I want to try and give people a sense of where you're coming from and what you want to do. Because people have tried to write you off as a complete nut. Mm-hmm. They've tried to sort of sideline you. I'm sure a lot of people thought you would have disappeared by now. But you seem to have an ever-increasing army of fans. I mean, the amount of emails I get to invite you back on the program is amazing. And people want to hear you talk. Wherever you turn up, there are huge crowds. Come and listen to what you have to say. Do you still feel driven that you've been given a reason to be on this planet?
Well, we're all here for a reason.
Sure.
I guess it's just working out your reason. I have a very simple philosophy. What I started doing in the early 90s, and it has increased over the last, 13 years now, is I have just been on a journey of trying to understand how this world works and why the world is run and why it's in the state it is.
The fact this planet has enough food, enough resources, that everybody could have a decent life, but it doesn't work out that way.
Exactly, because of manufactured scarcity and the fact that the vast majority of everything ends up in the same hands, because if you have abundance, you have choice, you have freedom. If you have scarcity, you have dependency, therefore you have control. This is why there is not a single reason why anyone on this planet should be hungry, homeless, any of that stuff. The reason they are is because the wealth and the resources are hoarded by the few, and the very, very few at the top of the pyramid. And I started to question, particularly through the 80s, why the heck is the world as it is when it doesn't have to be? Why do I not meet people who want a war or conflict with anybody, and yet there's wars and conflicts everywhere? And I started, particularly in the early 1990s, with a trickle of information that led me to...
Did this have anything to do with your trip to Peru?
Well, maybe to a certain extent, but you know, from the early 1990s and all the stuff in my books, I'm not sitting in a darkened room talking to some other dimensional entity. This is five sense, names, dates, places, connections, people. And I started with a trickle of information, with my understanding that those that appeared to be in control of the world were not actually the ones that were. And over these 13 years or so, I've traveled to over 40 countries. I've talked to thousands of people from all walks of life. I've read and I've studied, and I've met scores and scores of other researchers around the world coming from very different backgrounds who are coming to the same conclusions. And the information now is not a trickle. It's a tidal wave. My last five books total some 1.5 million words. And, you know, we seem to have this...
Do you find it difficult to write these books, or does it just sort of flow freely out of you?
Well, I mean, it's someone said that writing was 90% perspiration and 10% inspiration. Well, basically what I'm doing is putting a puzzle together, and what it takes to do that is to research an enormous number of apparently unconnected pieces before you can then start to put the pieces together and see the picture. And once I realized by the mid-1990s what the agenda was, what the end goal was, and the methods by which they are bringing this about, and also the way they've structured society.
When you say they, who are we talking about?
We're talking about a network of people who call themselves the Illuminati, illuminated ones, illuminated into knowledge the rest of us don't get.
Nothing and to do with the Illuminati that are mentioned in the Bible or...
Well, this Illuminati go back a very, very long way. Interestingly, you can chart them back to ancient Sumer and Babylon, which is where? Iraq. And a lot of the artifacts and texts that were looted by, according to museum directors in Iraq, people who knew what they were looking for, are the very texts and what have you from that period that you can pick this story up. And you can bring it through to the aristocracy and royal families of Europe. You can see how it was expanded around the world through the empires of Europe, particularly the British Empire. And today, there is a network, you could almost symbolize it as a spider's web. The center is in Europe.
The center is in Europe, not in America.
No. If you're where the power is, do you want people looking at me, everyone looking at you?
Absolutely.
You want them looking the other way. Mm. So,
so Europe's a powerful place to do.
Not on the level of governments. We're talking the center of this web, this spider's web of interconnected secret societies. And in America, they fire the bullets, but ironically, the center of the web is in Europe. A lot of power within the web in America, of course, but the center of the web is in Europe. One looks at Europe. They're looking at America as the big bad superpower, because people are looking where the bullets are being fired from, not where they're being loaded.
Are the Illuminati a different breed to the rest of us? Are they a different sort of species, or...? How did they get to be them? And well, I don't think I am, but I mean, how come we're not?
Well, in the end, the body is a vehicle for consciousness. In the end, you're talking about consciousness, and it doesn't matter what your body is, whether it's Arabic or Scandinavian or Jewish or black African. It's the consciousness in the end that is animating that body, that's deciding the behavior of that body, that is actually deciding what happens in the world. So
do you still believe very much in the soul and the consciousness that is us within these bodies that exists on different planes and other times? And
well, one of the great things that's been suppressed, that's allowed and encouraged us to lose the plot, is the nature of reality itself. It's one of the things I've been studying a great deal recently. And when you get into quantum physics and stuff like that, the world that we are conditioned to believe in simply does not exist. I mean, that wall looks solid.
Mm.
That wall is made of atoms.
Yeah. If I throw myself at that wall, it is solid.
Exactly, because that's your reality. The atom, or the atoms that solid wall is made of, are actually almost entirely empty space.
Mm.
I saw a physicist quoted as saying that if an atom was the size of a cathedral, the particles within it would be around the size of a 10-cent piece. So that is what this world, this solid world, is made up of. How can it be solid? It's about what we believe. Belief is the thing. What is our reality? And what we call miracles, when people do apparently impossible things, they're just detaching, disconnecting their sense of reality from the consensus reality that everyone else agrees on. So they can walk through fire without getting burned, because it's not their reality that they can be.
So that if you could detach your reality, or you could detach your perception of reality, you could walk through a wall.
If you, you could. Absolutely, you could. But, we are so conditioned from cradle to grave to this reality, that is a very, very difficult thing to do.
Is the journey that we all must go on, and few of us make very much progress in our lives and whatever, but is this journey that we must go on is to free ourselves so that we can actually live harmoniously with whatever's around us, or?
Well, the world's an illusion. We create it with our minds. Do you know, for instance, I didn't realize this until I was reading a few months ago, when people say, I saw it with my own eyes, we don't see with our eyes. We see with the visual cortex in the brain. That's where pictures register. And as research has shown, between the information passing into the eye and hitting the visual cortex, where we actually register sight, that information passes through other parts of the brain, which, as these experiments have shown, edit up to sometimes more than 50% of the detail that actually comes in. And this editing process takes place on the basis of the person's belief. And so the real bottom line of this manipulation of the human race is the manipulation of our sense of reality.
Do the Illuminati know about this?
Of course, in great detail. This is one of the great areas that they manipulate us. One of the major areas, I would say the major area that powers human behavior is not even the conscious mind, it's the subconscious mind. It's interesting, again, as experiments have shown, around a second and a half before the conscious mind decides to speak, move its arm, do whatever, the electrical signals have started in the brain to do it. We are very much influenced in our behavior and our perceptions and our reactions by the subconscious mind. And all the time, our subconscious mind is being subliminally conditioned in various ways, some of them simple, some of them more complex. Because if there's a few of you and you want to control a vast number of people, you ain't going to do it physically, just as you ain't going to control a herd of sheep physically. But you don't. You control sheep by two states of being, bar-bar, following the one in front without question, just get them to go with the norms and don't question them, and fear, symbolized by the sheepdog, frightening the sheep into line that won't immediately come into line. It's a mind game that allows a farmer to control sheep, vast numbers of sheep, which if he tried to do it physically, he'd never have a chance. And it's the same with the human herd, which we've allowed ourselves to become. We are being constantly conditioned to take on a certain reality. For instance, if you ask anyone today in Sydney, Australia, New York, Frankfurt, you stop them in the street and you ask them, who was responsible for 9/11? Why was it done? How was it done? And what should happen as a result? They will give you basically the official story, because that's the only one they've heard. That official story, the accepted history of 9/11, has come not mostly, entirely from official statements by people who have a history of having a genetic problem with telling the truth. As even some of the mainstream media have done during the Iraqi war and the build-up, they've pointed out lie after lie after lie that have come out about the reasons for the war and what will happen as a result of the war. We've had
chemical weapons of mass destruction.
We've had Claire Short come out and say that she was had assurances about UN involvement in the aftermath, which have been broken.
These guys
lie. Just let me finish this point. They lie. And these are the people, James, who have given us the official story of 9/11. The consequences of which have allowed this agenda put together before 9/11 to unfold in front of our eyes.
Okay. Claire Short, not obviously a member of the Illuminati.
Claire Short and Mo Molem are classic examples of the level of freedom that we have in the world. We have the freedom to agree. And then when we don't agree, the system jumps upon us. When they were cabinet ministers, they were, they're very talented people, very intelligent people, they're doing a great job. The moment they come out, because Mo Molem, if you remember, said basically the same, and they say that this is basically a dictatorship by president, not a cabinet government, immediately they're mad. I mean, we had the deputy prime minister, Prescott, talking about Mad Mo. Just because she's actually saying things that this authority doesn't want to hear. But, and we've just had a mirror repeat over the last few days.
The same thing was said about Margaret Thatcher, of course, and she was removed. John Major came to power, and he was removed eventually. Now we have Tony Blair, and it looks as if Tony Blair doesn't have an enormous amount of future at number 10.
Does it?
I think so.
Really?
I think, yeah, because what happens is people begin to sort of see that they're being manipulated. And once you begin to feel you're being taken for granted, which I think is what happened during the Thatcher years as well, then you just won't play the game anymore. I mean, so we do have this free will, don't we, still left, don't you think?
Well, as a few people have said in their various ways over the years, there's none so controlled as those who think they're free. Thinking we're free and we have freedom when we're in a fundamentally controlled situation is probably the ultimate illusion. I tell you, one of the themes that you pick up, it's one of the things I've talked about in my books over the years, is when there is a chosen one, the opposition leader tends to be not someone who is considered credible, a credible alternative. So when they wanted Margaret Thatcher, who came to power? Michael Foot. Who followed him? Neil Kinnock. They just weren't considered credible people. Now look at the two people that have faced Tony Blair. A reverse situation. And so we have a situation where I'm sure that a very large number of people in this country would like to get rid of Blair, but they look at the alternative and they say, well, crikey, what alternative is there?
So presumably the Illuminati will find somebody, and it could be in any party, that we will actually think will make a better leader than Blair.
The way it works is this, and you can see this over and over again. I mean, there's a lot of people in America, despite what the propaganda says, a lot of people, vast millions who have sussed this. They talk about the Republican Party because they realize that actually the Democrats and the Republicans are two masks on the same face. What you get is this. This is what I'm talking about in terms of the illusion of freedom, because if we're going to accept the control without realizing it, we have to be kidded that there is no control. So what you have is this situation that plays out again and again and again. You have the party in power, which introduces the agenda, and the agenda is for ever more centralization of power, because for a simple reason, if a few want to control the many, to increase that control, they have to centralize decision making. This is why these guys want a world government, world central bank, world army, world currency, microchip population. And that's their goal for global government, because then a few people are making the decisions that control literally everyone on the planet.
And you think that'll happen?
Oh, we're hurtling towards it. I mean, you know, it's not just me. I mean, I've written this in my books over the years, but look what's happening now. We're now getting the blueprint for the Constitution of the United States of Europe that we were told was never going to happen. Because if we thought it was going to happen back then, we would not have accepted
it. So I've just had a thought. So at this particular moment, we're all being told that we're living under a dictatorship. Tony Blair doesn't believe in consulting people. He's put in an enormous amount of people into the cabinet that weren't even elected.
Including Claire Short's successor.
Exactly. Now, it looks as if we're going to be, and we're being told that he's running the place as a presidency, but we don't have a written constitution or anything like that. It looks like we will be begging to join some organization that gives us a written constitution, rights and everything else. And perhaps before we know where we are, we'll suddenly be told, listen, join Europe, come into the single currency, allow Europe to take over, and you won't have to put up with this sort of thing anymore.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, yes, and I'm sure there's validity in that. But the agenda is for us to join the United States of Europe and to go in the single currency. About maybe two or three books ago.
People won't vote for it now.
Well, about two or three books ago.
If you had a referendum now, they won't go for it.
And long may it stay like that. But two or three books ago, I was saying that Tony Blair had been brought in to take us into the single currency. That is what he's going to attempt to do.
How's he
going
to change our minds now? Because at the moment, we don't like him much.
Well, if you look at what happened back when we had a referendum to stay in Europe, you had the key people in the Conservative and the Labour parties funded to the tune of millions and millions and millions of pounds in their fund to say we must stay in. The people who were trying to make the case to the public to come out, they were dealing with peanuts in comparison. They got peanuts in terms of coverage compared with the others also. And the other thing that you'll have increased the closer it gets is you're going to have people from industry and business and the transnationals coming out and with all the fear stories of what will happen if we don't take this single currency and all this stuff. And you're going to have a massive propaganda campaign. And if you look, anyway, at the history of referendums in Europe, whether it's Denmark or whether it's Ireland, when they get the wrong result, James, they just wait a bit and have another go until they get the result they want. And so what we have, as I was saying earlier, is this situation in a so-called democracy where the party in power introduces the agenda, more and more centralization of power and all this stuff, and the party who's not in a position to introduce the agenda at that time because they're the opposition, they oppose the agenda, giving the idea that we've got some kind of political debate here. And then we have a farce of an election. The opposition become the government become the opposition. Now, the opposition that opposed certain things when it couldn't introduce them, now in government starts introducing them. This is what we've seen with the Labour Party all the time. And the party that was in government and now out now starts opposing the agenda like the Conservatives have done since. And in America, it's the same thing. Whoever's in power introduces the agenda. Whoever's ever out of power criticizes it. So we have this illusion that we're in a democratic situation of debate and choice.
How many people do you think in total inhabit this Illuminati, these special beings who are there to sort of run the whole world eventually?
It depends how far you go up the pyramid. I mean, when you're at the level of the Bush family and even people like Cheney and stuff like that, you're still nowhere near the top.
Are the people right at the top people we've never heard of?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you see, if you want to really hide something, if you want to hide where the real power is, you don't put it on public display.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Hold it there and come back. Lots of people want to talk to you as well. 0871 222 8888. Back with David Icke after this. Welcome back. Tonight, the man that a lot of people have been asking me to get back on the program, David Icke, is with me, and you will have a chance, I hope, to get and speak to him just before we start taking the calls. Let's go back, David, just to the last time we spoke a couple of years ago, uh-huh. I think, when you came in. At that particular time, you were very much into the shape-shifting reptiles. I since have not received an offer of an OBE from the palace after...
No, I've lost United.
Do you still believe in that? I mean, there's some
people... let me make this point. I'm like a journalist who doesn't have an editor. Or a proprietor. So what I do is I report that which I come across. Now, when you travel around the world talking to endless people from many different walks of life, and they tell you about extremely similar experiences, I have a very simple outlook. I follow information. I don't come from any preconceived idea. I just want to know what's going on. And if you try to research what's going on in this world, and this world is not just a little bit not like we thought it was, it is nothing like it. If you try to research it with a belief system, then you're doomed because your belief system will start to edit that which it doesn't want to hear. Also, if you could care a damn what people think of you, and I had that kicked out of me in the early 90s, that prison, you ain't going to talk about some of the things you're going to find because you're going to think, oh, people think I'm mad. I don't care whether people think I'm mad. I have no interest in it. You know, believe what you like. I ain't bothered. So therefore, what I do is I take this information that I get from people and these experiences they tell me about, and I kind of report them. And when you, over a period of years, have one after the other of these accounts that people give you, of seeing people transform in front of their eyes into a non-human form and then go back again. And I was in Texas. I was talking only in Texas about a month ago. And in the audience was a therapist who works with people who've been abused in what we call satanic ritual and all this stuff by some very, very famous people, the same names that keep coming up and have come up for years. And they talk to you about the same experiences that those people are having of seeing these people that change into another form and come back again. When you look at the historical accounts, which are talking about the same thing, when you meet, as I have and spend a large amount of time with, shaman in South Africa, Credo Mutwa, who's the official historian of the Zulu nation. And he is telling you the very same stories and accounts that people are having, ancient and modern, in Africa. Then there's something to look at here. And when you realize then that when you look through your eyes, you're not actually seeing a world. You are seeing a frequency range. That's all you're seeing. You're seeing the frequency range that our five senses can access. Beyond that tiny, tiny frequency range that we can perceive with our five senses is infinity. And what the hell exists in that infinity?
And let me just get this over. So in infinity, and we were talking to Lawrence Gardner, I think he was on the program last week, who was talking about something similar, that infinity is on this planet. We don't have to worry about the universe, but surrounding this planet, on this planet, there are many more dimensions than we understand.
Infinite dimensions. Yeah. And they're sharing the same space. This is the point.
The same way that TV pictures are moving through us at the moment and radio sounds are moving through everyone, there are other beings moving through us and we're moving through them.
If you like.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like if you take your body to your five senses to be talk radio or Radio 1 or whatever. Those five senses tune us into a certain frequency range of consciousness. But as you point out, in that same space is all the other frequencies of consciousness going into the infinite. And it is possible for entities to move between dimensions. And when you look at the amazing, almost infinite variety of forms there are in this tiny frequency range we call the physical world, what the heck variety of different manifestations must there be within the infinite? And what we've got caught in is this myopic bloody idea that if we can't touch it, see it, taste it, whatever, it can't exist.
We're going to take a short break for the news, David, and we'll come back. Alison in Market Harbour, Ron in Belfast, Jim in Bournemouth, and many other people who are waiting to speak to David Icke.
We'll
do that after
mom.
The news. And maybe even David's mum. 0871 222 8888, or you could email us at talksport.net, or if you prefer, you could text us. Which everybody texts now, don't they?
I don't. I haven't got a mobile phone. Can't stand them.
10 89. We'll get you one.
I'll give it you back.
James Whale on 1089 and 1053 AM. Talk Sport.
Okay, welcome back. I'm sorry about the news. There's a little technology that seemed to take over. It's very strange now that you think we're so advanced in what we can do, and yet when part of our computer system goes wrong, we can't turn it... I don't understand that, Ash. I don't understand how we can't just turn it off.
Yeah.
But do you understand?
Well, I understand that we can't. I don't know why.
Well, it would be nice to find out. Really, I'm sorry about this, David.
Well, I don't know why.
It's lucky we're not flying an aeroplane, really, isn't it?
I don't know what the point is.
Oh, good, fine. David Icke's my guest. I think we're going to take a few calls first before we do anything else, David.
All right,
if you want to put those headphones on or hold them up there somewhere, we'll go to Alison, who's in Market Harbour, which is an area that David knows well.
Or down the road from Leicester, yeah.
Alison, you're on the air.
Hi, James.
Hi, Alison.
Hi, David. How are you?
Hello, Alison. I'm good.
Oh, that's great.
I love the accent. It's a Leicester accent, though. Hey, up, me duck.
Hey, up, how are you doing?
All right, me duck.
I wanted to ask you, I became interested in conspiracy theories about 13 years ago.
Uh-huh.
when I was introduced to a born-again Christian who was very interested in the works of Barry Smith. I don't know if you've
heard the New Zealand guy, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, he was talking about some of this a long time ago.
Right, that's right. So I read quite a lot of his books and watched his videos, and sadly he's died now. He died last year. But I'm really interested in the microchip and the 666. And the Book of Revelations, and I was just wondering if you could sort of give me any inkling on how long you think it's going to be before this is going to happen.
Well, it is happening. I mean, let me say that, you know, a lot of people from the Christian point of view look at this information and they put a biblical kind of angle on it. I don't come from that direction, but
no, I'm not really interested
sure.
in it from a religious point of view. But I do believe that since I started reading this stuff and then read the Book of Revelations and everything, from a religious point of view, I have no interest in religion. It was just something that I was reading and got.
So hang on, Alison. Let's get David to answer this. I mean, what you're saying is you're worried about when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, the fact is, it is happening. Over the last 13 years, there's been a constant theme in my research into the agenda, and that is the jewel in the crown of this agenda, which is a microchip population. Now, when people first started talking about this, it sounded really kind of far out and science fiction, all this stuff and what have you. What's happening in America now? Are thousands and thousands of people are being microchipped since 9/11 with some bizarre idea that it's going to protect them from terrorism. And the chip being used is actually one that I featured in a book called Children of the Matrix. And it came out and there was reaction against it. Hey, microchip people, what are you talking about? Then came September the 11th and suddenly the thousands of people are actually being microchipped. Now, about 1997... I was asked to meet through a third party, a CIA scientist in America, who joined the CIA thinking he was serving his country, as many people do, and then realized that this agenda exists, and they didn't want his genius in the area of magnetics and what have you to help people, but to advance this agenda. And when I met him, he told me that he had, after a while, when he'd realized what was going on, he had rebelled and refused to work for the CIA. And he said that he remembers in this rebellion period leaving home one day, and then he has no recollection until he woke up on a medical-type bench in a room. And when he got his faculties back, he realized there was something stuck to his chest. And as he was telling me this story, he was opening his shirt. It was at his home where I met him. And on his chest was this, it was like a see-through shampoo sachet. And in it was this orangey golden liquid. And he said that they're called patches in the CIA. And he said enormous numbers of scientists who are working for the CIA against their will in underground projects and what have you are patched. And what's in the patch is a drug that their bodies need to survive. And these patches have to be replaced every 72 hours or they start to die. And when he rebelled again, when he was patched, they took it away and he started to die in a very horrible way until he agreed to work for them again. Now, the reason I tell you that story is not just because that's what's happening in the world we never told about, but what this guy said to me was, if people say no to one thing, he said to me, tell them say no to the microchip. He said, because people, even people that are aware of the dangers of microchipping are seeing it at the level of electronic tagging.
So you think that the... I mean, because I always thought, what a great idea. Now, tell me I'm wrong. What a great idea to have all your information, your medical history and all your medical notes, everything, all your employment numbers and everything else on a little microchip inserted under your skin. You wouldn't have to worry about where your cards are.
No,
or
great idea.
Blood type, the whole lot.
Absolutely great idea. And that's how it's going to be sold. That's how it is being sold. They're not going to tell you what it's really about. They're going to sell you the movie so that you think, hey, good idea, get chipped, hey. And they've started the process of introducing it through microchipping domestic animals. And
like I have my dog microchipped, so I can take him abroad and bring him back.
And what they're saying is, in America, microchip your children, you'll always know where your children are and all this stuff. Now, that's the movie level to sell it to us.
So are they microchipping their children in America?
Of course.
They're microchipping themselves. There's thousands of people that are lined up for, to get this chip, because it's called Digital Angel, and which I feature in one of my books. Now, what this scientist said, let me give you the other side.
But and you saw this guy with your own eyes with this patch on his chest.
Oh, yeah, I spent hours with the guy.
Right, okay.
He was a lovely man, and he was, I mean, how do you feel?
Frightened? He must be
terrified. I mean, he's got kids. He doesn't want to die, and he's got caught in a web that he can't get out of.
And if they found he'd spoken to you, which now they know,
mm-hmm.
because you've mentioned it, and as we all know, everybody listens into every broadcast that's going out. Will they be able to find him, do you think?
Well, I've never mentioned where I met him, and I've never mentioned anything about him except what he told me. But what he said to me is, you know, tell people what's going on. But the point I'm coming around to is this. One side of it, you say, oh, you have a great idea and all that stuff. What is it really about? The part they don't tell you. What this guy told me, this is 1997, is that it's not just even about electronic tagging, so some computer knows where everyone is, like your car and all that stuff. It's actually about, not so much, although it's partly about that, that the messages going from the chip to the computer. He said what it's really about is the messages coming the other way. He said to me that outside the public arena were microchips that were so small they can be inserted through a hypodermic needle in vaccination programs. And they
so you could go in for some sort of injection and they could stick in the microchip, then you wouldn't even know.
And the person doing it wouldn't know either. What he was saying was that the technology, once you're microchipped, allows you to be emotionally and mentally manipulated and physically affected by the pulses going to the chip from the computer or wherever it is. And, you know, I remember years ago when I was on the phone to get another satellite channel, when I had satellite television, and I talked to this guy up in Scotland from the Isle of Wight, about as far as you can get away in Britain. And what I expected was he would take a credit card number and put another card in the post, right? So I'm there, and I told him what I wanted, and he said, look at the screen and tell me what's happening. And The new channel came up, right? And I said, how do you do that? He said, I've just reprogrammed the card in your machine in front of me, in my front room, from Scotland, where he was.
And you know, that worries me. I mean, the same thing, that you know, if you have satellite television, you have a connection that goes into your phone line, so they can feed you movies straight down the phone line into your home. What can't they do?
Well, what this CIA scientist was saying is that that basic principle of rewriting that card from a great distance is the same principle of what these microchips are really about, affecting us by affecting the chip from a distance.
And practically said, everybody has a credit card with a microchip on it.
That's a stepping stone towards it. You see, there's two major techniques that are used to advance this agenda of global centralization of power. One is the one that I've called problem-reaction-solution, which is what 911 was. You create a problem, you blame it on someone else, you get the public to react to your problem, do something must be done, and then you offer the solution to the problem you covertly created by changes in society and legislation. And the other major technique is what I call the stepping stones technique. That is, you're going from A to Z, but you know if you go from A to Z in one leap, people are going to look up and go, hey, what the heck's going on here? So you go from A to B to D to H, and we're seeing the stepping stones of centralization and the stepping stones to the microchip.
Alison, yeah. in answer to all that, we're there. Nearly.
Right, but what can we do about it? I mean, I don't want to be microchipped.
Well, don't be. I mean, this is the point.
How do you get the choice?
But you could have been. You know, when you go to a doctor, as you say,
on that level. But consciously, we have to not allow these things to happen to us. You know, but is the only power...
Can we beat this thing?
The only power that is used to control us, James, is the power we give away every day. And the way that we concede to divide and rule and blaming each other and fighting among each other down the fault lines of race or political creed or religion and all this stuff. And that divide and rule allows the few to control the many. If Bush came out on the White House lawn and he said, we've had a discussion, this is what we're going to do. If enough people said, no, we're not, he has no power. His power is in people saying, okay, then the president said it, so we better do it. We need to start taking control back of our lives
No. Human beings are inordinately lazy. We're all lazy. We'll all take the easy option. So, well, unless we're really backed into a corner, yeah, but the vast majority...
I accept that, absolutely. That's why we've got in the mess.
Alison?
And if we don't reverse that...
We're lazy.
If we don't reverse that, we're going to be in a global fascist state in 5 years.
Well, it's all very sad, Alison. I don't know what we can do except whenever anybody says you must do this for your... You say no.
I don't do it, James.
And ask this question. This is another thing that I've learned over the years. When something happens in the world, be it a terrorist bomb, a 9/11, what has happened today in Saudi Arabia, ask the question, who benefits? Who benefited from 9/11? The people who died in the Twin Towers? No. The people who died in Afghanistan as a result of the official story being accepted? 5,000 civilians at least? No. One group of people and one group of people only benefited from 9/11. Anyone that wanted to have an excuse to take over country after country after demonizing them through the media, and anyone that wanted to take away basic rights to freedom and privacy, all of which have happened as a result of 9/11.
Thank you, Alison.
Okay, thank you.
See you later.
Bye.
Jim in Bournemouth, you're on the air. Hi, Jim. David Icke. Hi, Jim.
Hi, I'm David.
Hello, Jim.
David, hiya. Listen, the last time, seen you, you were a babyface BBC sporting guru.
Oh, I don't know about a hero.
And then a couple of days later...
Guru, I think he said.
Guru.
Yeah, guru. Oh, yeah, guru,
later, you were talking to God.
Well, that is a very, very long story, which I have talked about many, many, many times. And I see no point in going into all that stuff again. We're talking here tonight about the future of this world in terms of us having any freedom whatsoever. That's what I've come to talk about.
Right.
Okay, Jim, so what you'll have to do is read some of David's books to
But I did.
Oh, right.
Read them.
Okay, well
and
then...
The problem that I still keep coming back to is, David, why the transition? And what is it you seen, like, in them, in that short space of time, that you should convince us that we should follow you?
You've said... you've lost the plot about me, mate, even if you ever had it, by using the word convince and follow.
Right.
The problem that we've got ourselves into is because people follow. We don't need anyone else to follow. We need people to start thinking for themselves and coming to their own truth.
People can't follow David unless somebody gives them a lead.
That's why we got in the mess. We had to start taking the lead ourselves.
Because you had a very secure job. Yeah? Are you still listening?
Yeah, go ahead.
You had a very secure job. You were an expert commentator. You were a sporting guru. And then all of a sudden, you decided that you would toss all that and tell us, what you're telling us now.
So?
And, a bit of a prat, actually? Because from being a serious commentator on sport, which was
BBC... Jim, normally when you phone in, Jim, you make an intelligent and serious point. I mean, okay. I think your point is that why was David so stupid as to give up his high-powered, well-paid job and do what he does now?
No, not really. Not really.
Oh, wasn't it?
I think he was going nowhere in the job that he was in.
I see.
And then he thought...
So your pure motivation was to ring up and insult him. All right, thanks, goodbye.
Well, Jim's going nowhere either. But I want to make this point, because he used many words that were ludicrous about me, but one of them was convince. The last thing I'm trying to do is convince anyone of anything. This world is full to overflowing with people going around trying to convince others that their view of reality is right. I am simply communicating information that doesn't normally get into the public arena, and what people make of it is entirely up to them. Once I've communicated it, it is of no interest what they make of it. Why? Because it's none of my business.
Okay. Abdul in London, you're on the air through to David Icke. Hi, Abdul.
Hello, James. Am I on?
Yep.
I've been a long interest fan of David Icke for a long time, and I just wanted to ask him a few questions, if that's okay.
Yeah, go on. Go ahead.
I'm a teenager, and I was wondering, I've been studying the Illuminati for a very, very long time, and I've noticed that they have a certain plan that David Icke was trying to explain right there. But it depends more on the future generation, doesn't it? Because really, hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Yes, mate.
The future generation is the one that they want to corrupt. I've noticed as a 16-year-old that that people my age are becoming very, very corrupted, and it's like going out on the weekends and drinking, and you know, this culture that has developed is like just like we're basically like animals nowadays, right?
Well, one of the sad things is that you know, the young generations today are hit with more sophisticated conditioning and manipulation than ever, because the means to do it is getting more and more sophisticated all the time. But I must say that alongside that, I meet very, very large numbers of young people all over the world who are very, very open, very, very intelligent, and are seeing through so much that given the conditioning that they go through from cradle to grave, they are doing very well to see through.
Do you think that the youngsters now, who are all practically much, much more computer literate than most of our generation, are going to be less of a pushover than we were?
Well, I do hope so. But, I mean, I would make this point that we're not looking at some future generation here. We're not looking at what about the children. We're actually looking at this being introduced now in the next few years. But the more that people have been involved in the internet, which is one way that this information can and has circulated in the last few years and woken more and more people up, the better, because there, although this of course on a vast web of information there's going to be a lot of rubbish on it, there is some very, very good sources of information on the internet now, where you can get another view of current events that you don't get through CNN or the BBC.
Okay, Abdul, thank you for your question. We're going to come to Lou, then we're going to go to Lynn. If you want to join us, 0871 222 8888, David Icke is my guest tonight. Lou in Essex. Hi, Lou. You're on the air through to David Icke.
Hello, David.
Hello, Lou.
my question is about turquoise. I know that people used to sort of mock you quite a lot for what you believed, but I think I read on your site that there's recently been some proof that it actually does have a positive effect.
Well, the whole turquoise thing. I remember someone writing to me and saying, it's just a manufactured color. We tell the Native Americans that.
Mm-hmm.
Color is a frequency, and therefore colors affect people in different ways. How many times do you see someone in a certain color and their face is completely washed out? They put another color on and suddenly, whoo, they're brimming. Because we are frequency fields, consciousness, and everything's frequency fields, and so is color. They represent different vibrations, different frequencies, and so they affect us in positive and negative ways depending on the way we interact with them. I remember when I first met Credo Mutwa, he was head to or neck to foot in the most bright turquoise you've ever seen. And a lot of these native peoples around the world focus on that color because it has a very, powerful effect. But then again, other colors do too. But
Native American jewelry, that turquoise.
Oh, absolutely.
Area.
It's very much dominated by turquoise, yeah.
What do you think, Lou?
I think it's interesting. I've noticed that recently turquoise has become really fashionable and lots of celebrities are wearing it and things, and it seems to make people feel quite confident and calm.
I shall sue. No, I don't wear anything like that anymore. It was just a period that I went through, a period of amazing awakening, which took me from seeing the world in a very, very small way to seeing the world in a much bigger way. It was a very, very painful transition, I'll tell you.
How do you answer that, the criticism, David, that people give you? You know, you come up with different theories, sort of nearly every year is a different theory and a different thing that you've found to tell everybody, and that you keep changing your mind.
No, absolutely not. What actually happens is it's like building a... putting a cake together, if you like.
Yeah.
The layer goes on layer goes on layer goes on layer. I started off with this in the early 90s, understandably, just focusing on what you might call the five sense level of it. The names, dates, places, the structures of manipulation, what the goals were, what the techniques of manipulation were. And I, as I followed the story and followed the journey, it was very clear that you had to go beyond this frequency range we call the world before you're getting anything like to the point where the manipulation's really coming from.
So next year you will know different facts. You were telling us more stuff.
I'm just putting a book together at the moment, actually, which is very much in line with this question. It goes through the different levels, the level of the five sense manipulation, the interdimensional manipulation, and in the end, the fact that the whole thing's an illusion which we're creating with our minds. I mean, you know.
One day we might wake up and find out it's all been a dream.
This is a dream.
This is a dream.
This is as much.
So when we die,
this is as much a dream as the ones you have at night.
When we die, and this is the earthly body goes. So does our spirit inhabit something? Do we? Is that it? Or we wake up? Or what?
No. When our consciousness is operating through this five sense physical form, we get locked into the five sense frequency range, and that's where we perceive the world from. When we leave the body, we leave the five senses. We start perceiving reality from a different point. And some people describe it as moving from this frequency or this dimension to another one. That's not one way of putting it.
So when
basically our reality changes, is we step out of the spacesuit, so we start to see reality in a different way, and we're not stuck in this dense. It's not really dense, but we believe it is, so it appears to be, this dense physical world, which is, compared with when we're out of it, it's like trying to operate in treacle.
So these stories of people, I've interviewed lots of people who talk about psychic flying, who leave their bodies. I mean, I've had an out-of-body experience. So I'm absolutely convinced that you can operate and live in a different plane.
Sure.
And it's as if nothing is solid.
It's not.
Okay.
It's an illusion.
Lou, thank you for your call.
Leave the body.
Bye, Lou.
And we leave the conditioning of this five-sense world, that's when people have out-of-body experiences and they realize that it is an illusion.
When science... We're coming to Lynn next and then to Stephanie. You're very popular with women, I know, sir.
Oh, really?
Or maybe women are more tuned into this sort of thing than that. I don't know. It's interesting. When the scientists... And they're beginning to catch up now with the new science that is coming out.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, the microtechnology, the fact they can break down atoms, they can move through things into the... Science is going to catch up to all of this very fast.
Well,
the Illuminati are then not going to be able to control so much, surely.
Well, it depends what the level of knowledge of how to use this information is that you're working on. And there are some excellent books around now that have come out over the last few years, written by physicists who are making the obvious connection between what you might call mystics and people like that have been saying for thousands of years about the nature of reality. It's an illusion we create with our minds. And we create the illusion basically on the basis of our beliefs. And that's what quantum physics and subatomic physics is now confirming. I mean, how many people realize that the outcome of experiments on this subatomic level is affected by the beliefs of the scientists conducting the experiments?
I didn't know that.
There's an excellent book by a guy called Michael Talbot called The Holographic Universe, which is a little compendium of many of these things. It's very, very good. It's been out a few years now, and there's some other very good books as well. Because this world and our bodies are actually holograms, which we create with our minds. What a hologram is, you know, like a three-dimensional photograph that seems three-dimensional but isn't. It's an illusion. How holograms are created is they fire a laser at a photographic plate, and part of the laser beam is deflected away across whatever they want to photograph and then deflected back onto the photographic plate, where these two sources, one containing the image of what we wish to photograph, collides with the beam going basically direct, and it creates what they call an interference pattern. And it's very, very similar, in fact, the same as dropping two pebbles in a pond. The waves go out, and eventually those waves interact with each other. The interaction of those waves is a wave mirror picture of not only the two pebbles falling, but where they fell in the pond and at what speed and all that stuff. Well, that's basically the principle of a hologram. Now, when you look at that holographic print, which has the imprint of that interference pattern, it looks nothing. It looks like a series of waves that are completely meaningless. You fire a laser on it, and suddenly, miraculously it seems, a holographic image, three-dimensional, of what's been photographed, a person, an apple, whatever, suddenly appears. And the best of them look absolutely solid, but you can put your hand through them because they're illusions. Now, one of the great amazing characteristics of a hologram is that every single part of the hologram contains the whole. If you take that holographic print of a person and you cut it into four and fire the laser on any of the four pieces, you'll get the whole picture. Now, because holograms contain the whole at every level like that, that's why reflexology and some of these other alternative healing methods can find points on the feet that relate to every organ in the body. That's why acupuncture and other forms of healing can find a point on the ear that affects every part of the body. That's why all the information to grow a whole body is contained in every cell. It's because the body is a hologram, and therefore every level contains the whole. The increasing supporting evidence that the world is actually a holographic illusion that we're creating with our minds is enormous. And the real bottom line, and you know, you talked earlier about you say this, then you say that. They're not contradictory. They're add-on. They're getting a bigger level of picture.
The problem,
the bottom level of the manipulation is the manipulation of this, okay, this illusory reality.
The problem is it's so much easier to believe what they feed us.
Exactly.
That's why we're in the situation we're in. Lynn in Middlesex, you're on the air.
Oh, happy birthday, James.
Thank you, Lynn.
How old are you?
Hi, David.
52.
One more than me. Old guy.
Thank you.
I wanted to comment on the shapeshifters and the Illuminati, but can I just mention about the turquoise? Like, it's so protective that if you have a piece of turquoise that's yours, it might break instead of you breaking your leg.
Really?
Yeah.
So is you reckon carrying a piece of turquoise with you?
You mean
the stone rather than the colour?
Yeah, stone.
The piece of turquoise. Carry a piece. It protects you from harm and that. I'm going to get some.
Yeah.
Right.
Where can I get it from?
Well, they sell it in crystal shops.
Yeah. Turquoise. Right. Okay.
But about the Illuminati, the good news is that they can't ultimately succeed in their twisted evil plan because it's against the universal law. But the bad news is the damage they continue to do till they give in. But the Incunabala, have you heard of them?
No.
Because they're above the Illuminati, and they want to avoid Armageddon and lead the world, like mankind, towards free energy.
So who are these, what did you call them?
The Incunabala.
The Incunabala.
They're the tip top.
They're better than the Illuminati.
Yeah, they're above, yeah, right. They're above everything, above wealth, they don't, whatever.
Anyway. And do they exist on this planet now?
Yeah.
Are they in human form?
Well, yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay, I mean, are there any we could identify?
No, I couldn't name any. They don't even want to be named, I just thought I'd mention them.
How do you find all this out?
It's on the Wingmakers website.
Right, okay.
But also about the shapeshifters, because I've seen people shapeshift from one person to another, and they called it me being aware of them changing when they stepped in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this reptilian, well, you know, like Barney, the children's cartoon thing, not cartoon, you know, Barney, the kid.
The dinosaur?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Well, he was shaped like him. And he said, can she see me? Can she see and hear me? And I just pretended I couldn't. And he shook his hands and he went in my face. And one of the shapeshifters said, I don't know, but let's step out of the room while we discuss what we're going to do about it. So I just thought, because I did try and email that to David Ikesite, but I can never get through, I always get kicked off. And I've only ever got one email from Jocelyn saying that they were trying to shut the website down. Have they done that?
Well, they tried a few times, but...
Who tried?
Well, what you get is the people that are, the service, they'll just say they won't give you a reason. They'll just say we're not hosting a site anymore. So that's happened about three times, but we have a very solid one now. So.
Yeah.
So it looks like we've cracked it at last.
DavidIke.com.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, if it's all crazy and stuff like that, what do people want to do that for? But in terms of the, you know, I mean, you hear stories about, you know, the shape-shifting stuff. And when I first came across it, obviously, in the about the mid-90s, like everyone else, you go, what? But the stories are so many from so many different types of people, from so many different walks of life, and they are so common in their themes and experience that, you know, if people want to know what's going on in the world, there's something to look at here. Exactly what, we need to still know, but there's something going on here in relation to this.
It still has something to do with this gene that many of us carry, the gene of the, is it the R complex?
Well, no, the R complex. I mean, you see, I've learned so much in doing this, in trying to understand things. I didn't realize that the most ancient part of the brain, your brain, my brain, everyone's
reptilian
brain, is actually called the R complex by science, the reptilian complex. And it comes from our reptilian history.
Really?
There's still people being born with tails. You know that?
Well, yeah, I mean, people.
You know, codes, DNA codes that at this point in our evolution, for want of a word, should be closed, open.
So why is this reptilian side so prominent then, or managed to sort of stay involved? I mean, we don't think of reptiles as particularly intelligent beings, do we?
Well, the thing is that we come back
to higher brains being brought down to serve the reptilian brain.
Yeah, we come to what I mentioned earlier, that we have this idea that what we see through our eyes is all possibility, when actually infinity exists beyond this frequency range that we can access with our five senses. So all possibility exists. And, you know, when you look at the fantastic variety of forms, why shouldn't there be a form that is a reptilian in its visual appearance, but actually mentally very, very intelligent? Of course, if all possibility exists, that possibility also exists. And when you talk to people like Credo Muchwa, who was initiated into black African secret societies that were created when the Europeans first came into Africa, and people like Cecil Rhodes, in the words of Credo Muchwa, they wanted to milk the minds of the shaman, find out what they knew, and then kill them so that, that it wouldn't be passed on. Secret societies were created in black African culture to keep the ancient knowledge alive once the Europeans arrived. And Credo Muchwa was initiated into this knowledge. He's kind of over 80 now, like, you know, 50 years or so ago. And the reason he contacted me, and we spent hours and days together, was because he'd come across one of my books, The Biggest Secret, when I first introduced this reptilian thing, purely because I was coming across it in people I met. And he said to me, how do you know this? This is what I was initiated into 50 years ago. In black African culture, they call this race the Chitahuri, which translates as the children of the serpent or the children of the python. And again, this continual reptilian theme continues. Now,
could you be one of these and not know it? Or would you know it?
See, all I can tell you is what people tell me. And I've talked to a number of people who are on the inside of the Illuminati, but don't want to be. And as people talk about the CIA, just as one example, getting into it is much easier than getting out of it, as this scientist found with a patch on his chest. So people do who have come to the conclusion they don't want to be part of this because it's absolutely, they're starting to realize how grotesque the agenda really is. They try to get information out to people as they can.
Do you think people like Tony Blair, the royal family, people like this are all aware of what's going on?
Absolutely.
What do you think, Lynn?
Absolutely, 100%.
For me?
Yeah.
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they have to be aware of what's going on or they don't get into a position of power. They have to accept it. But they're not all bad, the reptilians. I actually saw a picture of a very good writer, and it's supposed to be the first picture of them ever printed. And I'm not going to say who it is, but they had a reptilian hand in this picture.
Mm.
And some of them, they thought they had no choice but to stay like that forever. But now they're starting to realise that might not actually have to be the case.
Do you agree with that, David? That some of the reptilian beings are not evil? Or?
Well, I don't like to use the word evil anyway. Okay. But of course, like I said earlier, in the end, it's not the form you inhabit or the form you take, it's the consciousness that is within that form, that is animating that form. So therefore, every single expression of form has the potential of being something that is looking for freedom and love, or control and imposition, depending on the consciousness that's animating that particular form. And of course, therefore, there'll be the whole spectrum of attitudes in all these different infinite forms that exist. Just, it seems to me from my research over the years and talking to people that this reptilian stuff is operating just outside the frequency range of the five senses. And sometimes it comes in, so you see it, and then it goes out again and it's gone. It's basically like people say, I saw this UFO and it disappeared in front of the eyes. And people say, it can't disappear in front of your eyes. You're mad. What actually happens is it changes frequency and it leaves the five sense frequency range. And so to someone with five senses, it appears to disappear.
Do you subscribe to the view that a lot of the UFO and stuff like this actually come from this planet, but from a different dimension? And they come in and out, or
the more that I move along this journey, the more I see this whole thing as interdimensional rather than what you might call extraterrestrial in the physical sense. I'm not saying that doesn't exist, but the real core of this for me is the interdimensional, the ability to move between dimensions into this one and out of it. And so, you see, like we said earlier, you know, you hear stories which sound from a, you know, conditioned level of reality are absolutely impossible, where people say, I saw this figure, be it reptilian or non-human in some other form, and it just walked through the wall. And people, you're mad, you can't walk through a wall. Well, you can if you're not of the frequency of the wall.
Okay.
Just like a broadcast can come through the wall and be picked up on a radio.
Lynn, thank you for that. Thanks very much indeed, Lynn. We move on. Stephanie in Leeds, we're going to come to you after these words. Okay, welcome back. The James Whale Show's tonight. Our special guest is David Icke. Stephanie in Leeds.
Hello, James.
You're on the air, Stephanie. Here's David.
Hi, David.
Hi, Stephanie.
I'm a big fan, David.
Oh,
please don't. I just wanted to ask you two questions. The first is about the microchip.
Yeah.
The problem, the way I see it, is if they can inject them, how can we possibly not accept them? If they're going to do it without us knowing, how can we not accept it?
Well, that's an obvious point. That's why I said earlier, you know, we need to reject it on the level that we're aware of it. But I mean, for me, my son is now 10, has not had a single vaccination,
Isn't that putting him at risk or not later life?
He's not had any. You start looking at the real background of vaccinations. I'd be putting him at risk by giving them to him. He's not had a single illness through his childhood. He's 10 years of age, my other son does not have them either, and it's the same story. You see, we have an immune system which when it's in its power, is capable of fighting off almost anything. That's what it's there for. It's when it's overloaded or suppressed, that's when we're in trouble, because it cannot cope with the things that are affecting the body. And if these vaccinations affect the immune system. And so one thing is, you know, bring an end to vaccinations. That's where I'm coming from. But, I mean, all we can do is be aware of what's going on and react to it as best we can. And I feel myself, and it's happening in America, that it's not just, you know, these tiny microchips they're talking about. They're actually looking for, you know, the kind of ones that are being introduced in America as well, that have been massively promoted on mainstream primetime television shows like Good Morning America and all this stuff, on the basis of protecting yourself from terrorism. How that's going to protect you from terrorism, I'm not sure I can work out, but that's the basis on which it's being introduced.
Stephanie, you've got a question about SARS, haven't
you? Yeah, I was going to say, it's actually been mentioned on Richard and Judy as well, believe it or not, and the Tonight Show in Britain.
Yeah.
The other question was about the SARS virus. I was wondering if you, you know, what are your views on the SARS virus? And, you know, there's been a lot of questions and hype about the AIDS virus being man-made, and I'd like to know his views.
Well, I've not researched the SARS thing to anything like the extent that I would offer an opinion. And I think when you talk about things you haven't researched, it's ridiculous. But I will say this, that the four-letter word that controls the world is fear. The more people are in fear, the more they look outside of themselves for people to protect them from what they are manipulated to fear. And there is a mass manipulation technique which goes under the name of future shock, among others, and that is to bombard the population with so many reasons to be fearful that basically they become docile and they just give all their power away, looking to people to protect them from all these fears.
As we all have done to a lesser or greater extent since we've been on high alert or not so high alert for terrorists.
So, I mean, look at what's going on in the world today in terms of future shock. You've got wars, you've got a constant fear of terrorism, you've got people that won't fly because of fear of terrorists, you've got the SARS thing. You know, are they going to get me with a bomb, or is somebody going to cough on me? I mean, what's going to get me? You know, relax. Once you concede to fear, you're buggered, basically. Yeah. And they know that. And so we have a society that is based on fear. I mean, even down to simple things, apparently simple things, like road traffic cameras. You know, people can't even relax in their car anymore, because no longer do you have a traffic cop sitting on the side of the road who has at least some leeway of assessing a situation and thinking, yeah, oh, he's breaking the limit, but it's not dangerous and all this stuff. Now you have a camera that says, boom, gotcha, no matter what the circumstances, 2 a.m. when there's no one around or whatever. Mm. And that's absolutely what the Illuminati want. They want to take away the use of people's minds to assess the situation.
I just thought, in 1984, I remember sitting where I'm sitting now, I seem to have been here for years, talking about, well, 1984, and it's not really like George Orwell predicted, is it? Here we are in 2003.
Yeah.
You can't move without being on a camera, without somebody knowing exactly where you are through your mobile phone, although you don't have one, or the microchip in your credit card, which I believe you can actually pinpoint people with. It's here already. We are completely observed. People know our bank details because they're all on computer. Mm-hmm. Every single thing about every single one of us is known by whoever up there wants to know it.
Yeah, I'm talking at the Brixton Academy on June the 7th, and actually on the posters for that event, it actually says, Big Brother is not coming, he's already here. And he is. Every single day that passes, Big Brother gets more and more and more control. And a lot of it has been introduced through the stepping stones technique, bit here, bit there, unreported here, unreported there, or it's not really important. Mm. And then you put it all together and you have a society that is amazingly controlled with constant surveillance. And what's a very important point to make is the effect of this on the subconscious. The subconscious picks up everything. The conscious mind, when it's looking at a situation, picks up certain parts of what it's looking at. The subconscious picks up all of it. So there is a conscious level and there is a subconscious level. And the conscious level of traffic cameras and all this other stuff is, I better watch my speed and all that stuff, and I can't relax in my car. Mm. But the subconscious level is constantly being reinforced with, we are watching you, we are watching you, we are watching you. Political correctness, we're watching every word you say, every word you say. And this is imprinting on the subconscious of the people, this control mentality. And it's at the subconscious level that we're being programmed. So there's much more to traffic cameras than just cashing people for speeding and taking their money.
So what are we going to do, Stephanie?
Oh, I don't know. I just think, like David Icke says, it's about love, not fear.
Do you know, it's interesting how more people are accepting David Icke now than calling him nuts. You remember a few years ago, we were all saying he's mad, you know, he's barking. And he's still here, still saying the same thing.
And things are happening.
If he had been mad, of course, they'd have found a reason to lock him up by now.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, though, James, that when you look at this word mad and crazy that is thrown around like confetti at people, when you analyze what it really means, it means different. And what happens, the major way that society is controlled, is norms are poured out through science, through education, or what we laughingly call education, through the media. Norms. This is normal. This is not normal. This is possible. This is not possible. This is sane. This is insane. And basically what that creates is a mental and emotional sheep pen of norms. And if the population conform to those norms, then hey, you're credible. You're normal. You challenge those norms. You step out of them. In other words, you are different to the norm. And if some people weren't different to the norm, we'd still be living in bloody caves. And you are suddenly not different. Hey, let's listen to this guy. Let's listen to this woman. Hey, they're saying something different. It's, you're mad. No, I'm different. Mm.
Stephanie, thank you for your call.
No, you're welcome. Please.
Bye,
Stephanie.
0871 222 888. A couple of emails. I've got loads here, but let's just do a couple here. This one comes from Omar. And he says, can you ask David if he knows anything about Dajjal? Dajjal, apparently the one-eyed being who will come at the end of the world and claim he is God, but he will actually be the great deceiver.
Well, he's passed me by.
Okay.
I will say that we are moving into a time when a very, very few people are going to actually be in control. Whether they'll introduce things like world presidents and stuff, like they're talking about a president of Europe and all that stuff, probably. But we're definitely moving to a time of enormous centralization of power. I call it the Fourth Reich. I don't think the Third one ever ended. I think it just went underground. But definitely we're looking at a global version of that.
Alfonso says, what does David make of the Celestine prophecy? Not a lot.
A lot of people have read the book and really got a lot out of it. I read through intuition. When I start reading a book, I intuitively feel, do I need to read this? And I never have.
Okay. Let's go to Gregory, who's in London. Hi, Gregory. You're on the air through to David Icke.
Good evening, David.
Hello, Gregory.
Nice to speak to you.
You too.
Question regarding the Illuminati and the European Union.
Right.
Now, to say that the Illuminati is omniscient and all-powerful, I think, runs the risk of falling into the sort of Marxist trap that victory is inevitable and there's nothing one can do about it.
I don't accept that for a second. I know what you say is correct. I don't accept that this is inevitable. Just before you finish the point, I must say that over the last 13 years, when I first started talking about this, I used to be listened to by a man and a dog when the dog turned up. And no one wanted to know. That is nothing like that now. There is a massive awakening going on. I went to America, where they're supposed to be this fantastic support for Bush and the war. I went to Phoenix for a week. I then went on to speak in Texas. I never met, this is true, one person on that entire trip that was for the war. And this includes sitting in bars with people and watching the coverage.
Can we just take a short break for the news, try and see if we can get it to work?
Right.
Do you want to stay with us, Gregory?
Yeah, certainly, certainly.
Come back after the news. It'll only be a couple of minutes, and we will rejoin David Icke then. If you want to check out his website, it is davidicke.com. David Icke with a C, all one word. Back after this.
James Whale on 1089 and 1053 AM. Talk Sport.
Welcome back to the James Whale Show tonight here on TalkSport live Monday to Monday to Thursday.
Yeah
Monday to Thursday.
Right.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us tonight. David Icke is still with us. It's a David Icke exclusive on the program tonight. We've got Gregory in London. If you want to join us, 0871 222 8888. Gregory.
Yes.
Remind me where we were, Gregory. The ball was in your court.
Well, it's...
Yeah, you're talking about European Union, Greg. Right?
Yes,
yeah.
And the inevitability, and that the victory of the Illuminati is not inevitable.
Hang on, both of you, just before we go. I mean, is it inevitable?
No, it's not. It's only inevitable if we allow ourselves to go on as we are, which is accepting the official version of events and giving our power away and not challenging it. But what is happening is more and more people are waking up. And to have a million people on the streets of London, many of whom have never protested like that against anything in relation to the Iraqi slaughter, which is what it was, and because there's 5,000 civilians that weren't liberated, they were exterminated, it is a tremendously encouraging thing. And I am actually very, very positive about the future. I think this thing's coming down. I think it's actually in its death throes when it appears to be at its most powerful.
Well, I absolutely agree with you that the European Union is a very sinister organization, and it does seek to destroy our freedoms, and it has already, and things like the single arrest warrant is very frightening. But there is...
David and Gregory, but Europeans are not keen on the EU either. I think we tend to forget that in this country. You know, the French hate they've got a euro instead of the franc now. I don't know much about the Germans. The Italians also hate it.
Well, yes, there is enormous opposition to this, and it's mounting to the European Constitution as well. Now, I'd like to ask David a specific question, or a couple of specific questions. Does the Illuminati allow the existence of this opposition in order to maintain this illusion of democracy? I think you alluded to it, to this idea earlier. Or is the Illuminati not as powerful as many think?
It's not all powerful. And again, I emphasize the power it does have is the power that the population gives to it every day. If it was all powerful, it wouldn't want to continually centralize power in fewer and fewer hands. It's not all powerful, but it is extremely powerful in manipulating events. The reason that we have the European Union, and incidentally they want a European Union version for the whole of the Americas,
yes,
also,
yes.
And that is due to be expanded around 2005 out of the NAFTA free trade area with Canada, Mexico and the United States, and they want another one in Africa, and they want another one in the Asia Australia area, which is due to be evolved out of this APEC, Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation. And what has George Bush announced this very week? He wants a free trade zone throughout the Middle East. These free trade zones, as we've seen in Europe, are designed to be evolved, stepping stone style, into the centralized state. And it's a very simple equation. If you are a few and you want to control the many, you have to destroy diversity of decision making, because the more points of decision making there are, the less control you're going to have over them. So what we're looking at in Europe is the incessant centralization of power, so fewer and fewer people are making the decisions that affect the whole of Europe. And it's very, very important that in this country we do not take the single currency, and we do not accept more and more of decision-making made in this country being handed over to Europe. It's not about being little England. It's about diversity of decision-making. Because then you have more freedom, the more people that are making decisions. And the closer decisions are made to the people affected by them, the better the decisions tend to be. The further away, the opposite happens. And what is happening? We're having decisions affecting communities all over this country taken by people further and further away from the people in those communities. So what do you have? Decisions that are not relevant to those communities. And we're now at a point in Europe where this stuff that people have been talking about, like me, for years about the world government is only the next stage away. And what are you going to have to do to bring about world government? You're going to have to destroy the status quo of a world organization. You're going to destroy the United Nations. It's played its part in being a stalking horse for centralization of global power, but now the point has come where they want to go to a fully fledged world government, and to do that they have to find that the United Nations is, quote, not working, so they have an excuse, problem, reaction, solution to replace it with a fully fledged world dictatorship.
All right. Gregory, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Couple of emails I want to go to here. This one just carries on and just sort of agrees with you. Kevin in, I don't know where he is actually, he doesn't say, but he's at his home. He says, David Icke is 100% correct. For many months now, the media is increasingly reporting the news using kilometres and metres. There's even a road sign near Gatwick that says no hard shoulder for 1 kilometre. Once the propaganda gets into full swing, the public will unfortunately easily be swayed. It'll be very trendy for some people in the public eye to have a view against what you know is public opinion, e.g. it's trendy to have a negative view of Diana, Princess of Wales, yet the quiet majority still think supportively of her. This will then change public opinion. The trickle of brainwashing regarding Europe has started already. Last week, we had a government statement admitting a problem regarding illegal immigrants. 24 hours later, a government minister commented that if we all had identity cards, the problem wouldn't exist. That's a little convenient, isn't it?
Well, these are the stepping stones. Like I said earlier, you know, we've gone in Europe from a free trade area, nothing to worry about, good for jobs and all, make everything much more efficient. Just a free trade area, nothing to worry about. United States of Europe, oh, you must be joking, we don't want to go there. Just a free trade area. Mm. And then, oh, well, you know, this free trade area could work much more efficiently, you know, if we had this and we had that and we had the other.
And none of us were asked. We voted for a market,
yep.
a European common market. Okay.
How many people asked to invade Iraq?
Mm. Well, okay, yeah. Steve says, does David know what the Princess of Wales meant when she said she was going to release information that would shock the world to its foundations 2 weeks before she was killed? Is that a conspiracy theory, or did she say that? I can't remember.
Well, she apparently said it, but Diana knew where the bodies were buried, if you know what I mean. She had an enormous amount on the Windsors, who are a diabolical family.
But they're only there. I mean, they're there by default, aren't they? I mean, if King Thingy-Bob hadn't decided to quit and go after his love in America, I mean, yeah, we'd have a completely, the Windsors wouldn't even exist, would they?
Well, I mean, they are the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. They are a German house, and so is Mountbatten, which was called Battenberg until they changed to an anglicized version because it was better PR'd in the time of the First World War.
Do you think we'd be better off without the royal family?
Oh,
do you think we'll change the royal family?
Oh, so, deep breath.
Shall I not get you going on that?
Let's look at it again. You know, it's 2003, right? It's, you know, when are we going to grow up? We have a head of state in this country that is only there because of her DNA. Excuse me, hello? If she had a different DNA, James, she might be cleaning the bloody throne, not sitting on it. That's how ludicrous it is.
I mean, for goodness sake. Oh, they're so lovely. Well, that's not what I've living it, I've seen.
I hate to ask you this next one. What does David think of the Philadelphia experiment of the 1940s? Are you even aware of the Philadelphia?
Oh, yeah, the Philadelphia experiment.
Because I'm not.
There was actually a movie about it, based on it, quite a while ago now. This is the story, accepted or not accepted, but it's been talked about by those that have claimed to be part of it, where in around 1983, they, in underground secret projects in America, I think it was 1983, they found a way of moving through time.
Did they?
So, this is the story. I mean, I wasn't there at the time. And that there was a situation where people were sent back through time to the 1940s to make changes. And there was a... the story was that a whole ship disappeared when it moved from this time to another time.
Yeah.
And there's lots of stuff on it on the internet. There's been many, many books written about it. I don't know if that's correct, but the idea of passing through time, which is just passing through frequencies.
So it wouldn't be as difficult now as a lot of scientists say, yes, you may be able to pass through time if you can go fast enough in the... Yeah. You wouldn't need to do that. Well, it would be a different concept.
Time doesn't actually exist. It's another illusion.
So it's our concept of time is very much in this in this dimension.
Well, the what we call linear time, this thing on my wrist, is very much one of the ways that we're controlled. It locks us into a certain idea of past to present to future and all that stuff. Whereas again, when you get into deep quantum physics, the whole idea of time disappears. Once you go to a certain level, there is no time, and time is an illusion, and it's an illusion that very much is part of the process of locking us into this reality to believe it's real.
Okay, let's go to Dave in Surrey. Hi, Dave. You're on the air through to David Icke.
Hi, Dave.
Hello, mate.
Yeah, great fan of you. It sounds like you got blown away a bit one day. A couple of questions.
Right.
Carrying on with the royal family thing, what did you make of what the Queen said apparently to Paul Burr about dark forces? So, how is Hollywood?
Well, let's have one at a time. Hang on. So the Paul Burrell and the Dark Forces, you wouldn't have been surprised in that, would you, Hershey?
Well, not at all, because, even at the level of the royal family, they are not at the top of the pyramid. They're just a strand in the web. They're a significant strand in this country, but they're a strand in the web, and there are people... behind them or above them in the hierarchy, considerably above them, that we never see, who actually dictate to people lower down, including them. I mean, one of the things that I've realized over the years is if you can see them and if they are in positions of visible power, they're nowhere near the top of the pyramid. They're all answerable to those above them. And the hierarchy of the Illuminati is absolutely based on fear. Each level is terrified of the level above it. And just as they manipulate the society in general through fear, their whole hierarchy itself is based on fear, because the consequences of not doing what is necessary are, goodbye.
Are these Illuminati, I mean, are they defeatable? I mean, if you shoot them, do they die, or are they, you just don't kill them, or what? I mean,
well, I of course, when they're in a physical form, the physical form dies like everything else.
Right.
Consciousness doesn't with any of us. But I think we need to get beyond the idea of defeating and fighting. Fighting for freedom.
So they are,
I love the phrase fighting for peace. I mean, what a contradiction in terms. It's not about fighting, and it's not about winning. It's about removing and withdrawing our power from the game. Not giving our power away to people to dictate to us, saying, no, I'm not doing that. We're not having that. And if that's done on a large enough scale, the few do not have the power over the many. It's only there when the many say, well, I better do it then. And so this idea of we must fight the Illuminati, we must stockpile weapons and battle against the Illuminati, as many people in America talk about, is just playing the same game of division and conflict. One of the key things about this reality is that it is about division and it is about duality. It's about light and dark. It's about positive and negative. And when you get into not just what mystics have been saying for thousands of years, but you get into this quantum level, you find that everything is the same energy. We are actually all one infinite consciousness which expresses itself in infinite ways.
So the same sort of atoms that make up the desk in here make up part of the body as well. And
the same energy, the same consciousness that manifests as all this apparently variety of forms is actually the same energy, same consciousness. It's just manifesting itself in different ways. So when Israelis, soldiers, kill Palestinians, they're actually killing themselves. When Palestinian suicide bombers kill Israelis, they're killing themselves. When American pilots bomb and kill Iraqi civilians, they're killing themselves, because we're all one consciousness which is experiencing itself in various ways. What has happened and been encouraged and manipulated to happen in this reality we call the world is that everything is projected as isolated from everything else, division, and everything being one thing and not the other. Therefore, you have the situation where you can play these illusions of division against each other. There was a fantastic American comedian who died, unfortunately, back in, I think, 94, called Bill Hicks. And he was a very profound...
I had an email about that here, but yes, go on.
He was a very profound man, and he used humor to get a lot of these points over.
So the world is just a joke. We're in a joke of...
Well, it's a dream. It can be a lovely dream, or it can be a nightmare. That depends on what we create and what our beliefs are and what our attitudes are. But he said, as part of a joke, but in a very profound way, he said, matter is merely energy condensed to a slow vibration. We're all one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. There's no such thing as death. Life is just a dream, and we are the imagination of ourselves. And that so encapsulates the nature of this reality. The imagination of ourselves is the bottom line of how we are manipulated. It is the manipulation of our imagination of ourselves. So therefore, we are manipulated to believe that we are not connected to everything else, that we're like an island, that we're isolated, and that is not connected to that, when it actually is. And interestingly, when you look at the movie The Matrix...
Let's take a break. I want to come back and talk about The Matrix.
Okay, fine.
Dave, sorry, thank you very much indeed. We're going to move on. Actually, I'll tell you what, I have this little philosophy on life I've had for years and years and years, and it seems to be, in a way, I think what we're saying is I don't think anyone at all should take anything without questioning it. Nothing at all. I don't think anything you see, anything you read, anything you hear, particularly people like me or David or any orator anywhere, you shouldn't. People are so prepared because they read it in a newspaper, because they heard James Whale say it, or because it was on News at 10. That must be right. It's only one person's interpretation or one person's feeling at the time.
This is fundamental to taking our freedom back. It's not believing in the truth. It is having your truth. And again, when people start to have their truth, their unique spin on reality, you are dismantling the herd mentality.
So that when everybody is more worried about employment, about money, and everybody, there are only a very few people who aren't worried about those things. We're all worried about them. Everybody.
And they're meant to be.
Yeah. And that is the thing that's the one thing I learned after getting ill, is that it really doesn't matter. Because, you know, you can choose to do two things. You can choose to have a crap day, or you can choose to have a day that actually makes you feel good. And even I can't, I every day I can't manage that. I mean, some days you get out of bed and things just go wrong and you can't handle it and you feel tired and you don't want to do it. And I get to a situation where I sit and think, look, you know, this existence in this form isn't here forever. For God's sake, you know, make the most of and enjoy and try and make everybody else have a better time while you're here. It's us that give up. You know, we should wake up, actually.
You're so right. And one of the great ways that we are held in servitude is this idea that we are not in control of our lives. If we're not in control of our lives, then we must... Who is in control of our lives? We must pass it off. Okay. We must look for someone else to help us, because we're not in control of our lives. We are.
I've got to ask you about fluoride in the water as well, because we had a conversation about that last night, and it's going to be put in, or this government is seeking powers now to put it into the water without any sort of consultation.
You know when fluoride was first put in drinking water?
No.
Nazi concentration camps.
We'll talk about it after this break. Welcome back. David Icke's my guest tonight. And David, of course, I think a lot of people thought would disappear after he decided to change from being a media star, I suppose. David, you were, first of all, of course, you were a footballer. And then you went on to be, I was going to say the Gary Lineker of your day. But yeah, I suppose you were the Gary Lineker of your time, weren't you?
Well, to an extent. I mean, I was very young compared with the rest of the people, or most of the rest of the people in the sports department at the BBC, and I seemed to have a long future there. But once I got into the 1980s, in the late 1980s particularly, I had no desire to do that anymore.
What made you? What suddenly came? I mean, did you suddenly had this revelation to say I am the son of God, or no, you didn't say that, you said I think I've been chosen or something along those lines. Did you think about it? Did you consider what you were going to do?
What was happening during the 1980s is my enthusiasm for being a television presenter was diminishing and diminishing and diminishing, because I basically went through what you were talking about. I looked at what I was doing, and I looked at what was going on in the world, and I thought, you know, I could do something a bit more productive in my life than introduce the football. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that was the decision I made. And so through the latter years of the 80s, I was basically presenting television programs while I was trying to get my head together about where I was going to go from here. And then in the very early 1990s, in 1990-91, I went through, I could talk for kind of an hour about what actually happened. I went through some amazing experiences. And it basically, my whole sense of reality had a missile hit it. And I went from seeing the world in a certain way to suddenly seeing the world in a completely different way. I was looking through the same eyes, but I was seeing a totally different world. I could see things I couldn't see before. And in that transition period, when I'm trying to, you know, get my head around this, that's when we had all the stuff in the early 90s. Yeah. But that was vital to me. What life tends to do is it tends to wrap the greatest opportunities in something that looks akin to your worst nightmare. So in the early 90s, I couldn't walk down any street in Britain without being laughed at. I mean, going into a bar, forget it, there was uproar. Go on a train, stand on a platform.
Were you frightened at that time?
Bewildered.
But how did your family take you?
Well, obviously they were as traumatized as I was in a sense. But I tell you what was happening at that time is that there was two distinct levels of me that I was aware of. One was experiencing it and thinking, oh my goodness, what have you done? And there was another level of me that was going, this is fine, don't worry about it, this is leading somewhere. And what that time gave me when I look back was absolutely vital to what I'm doing now. And that is, it let me let go of the prison that most people live in, which is the fear of what other people think.
most people are not living their lives speaking the truth that they wish to because they fear what other people will think and say if it's different to the norm. So therefore, they're not living their truth. They're living someone else's version of what they think they should be. And this is psychological fascism. Anyone out there who is imposing their belief on others through ridicule or condemnation is a psychological fascist. Believe it, and then we might live in a different world. I had a choice when I went through that amazing ridicule, and that was to go under, to run away and hide, or to step out of that prison of fearing what other people think. I chose the latter. And instead of going away and hiding, I went talking around universities, which was an interesting experience at the time when all that stuff was going on. And I remember speaking at a university, I think it was in Nottingham, and I walked out, and it was 15 minutes or so before I could actually start because of the shouting and the uproar and all the other stuff and things being thrown at the stage. And I stood there until there was silence, and I talked through it that night. When you can do that, when what people think of you is no longer an issue, it is such a freedom I cannot describe. And it's only then that you look back and you realize the prison you have lived your life in, always looking over your shoulder. What will my mother think? What will the neighbors think? What about the people at work? What about the people at bar? Oh my goodness, what will they think? And what I do now, I have no mental gymnastics. How can I put this in a way that this person will think I'm an okay person? What can I leave out so they'll think I'm not mad? I just say what I feel, and it is such a freedom. As Mark Twain said, when you tell the truth, there's no reason to remember anything. It's only when you lie and try to hide the truth that you have a reason to remember everything, anything. And that's why politicians get caught out all the time.
So you feel driven, obviously, that you have to do this.
I do feel driven, and I must feel driven because, frankly, I don't want to do it. I can think of many much nicer things to do with my life.
Yeah, but coming back to the beginning, that you didn't need to give up your job. There's always going to be work for somebody like you. You could have had a nice job earning good money now. You didn't feel you could do that. I felt
driven to go down that road, not knowing for a moment at the time where it was leading, but I just felt driven to do it. And I tell you what changed my life. And continues to do so. I made a decision that when my intuition, what some people call the heart, the feeling, I just feel I have to do this, was at odds with what my head was saying, I was always going to go with my intuition. Because most people have this war going on between what they feel to do intuitively, what they really feel to do, and what their head is telling them to do from its conditioned view of how things should be done. And what happened to me is I followed my intuition. It was the only reason I started this journey, because what was my head saying? I mean, you know, I actually wasn't mad, and I was doing it in awareness. I knew, I mean, I was a journalist, for goodness sake. I knew what the reaction was going to be. And what tends to happen is when you first go with your intuition, you get yourself in some interesting situations. And those two levels of me I was talking about was the subconscious level of me, the higher conscious level of me, and the experiencing level of me. The experiencing level was in absolute kind of having a nightmare. I mean, the world was laughing at me. This other level of me was saying, it's going to be fine. Because the conscious level, symbolically, can see the next turn in the river. Other levels of our consciousness can see the river from source to sea. It knows that what is a nightmare now to the experiencing level is actually going to lead to something real positive further down the road. And what happens when you first follow your intuition, as I did, and you'll go with it whatever, you get yourself in some interesting situations. And the head level crosses its arms and says, see, look what happens when you don't listen to me, right? And a lot of people at that point, they say, I'm not doing this again. Look what happens. What I decided to do was I was going to keep going with this intuition no matter what. And what happens after a while is what seemed to be a nightmare
actually turns out extremely positive. And what is the positive things that have turned out have not happened despite the nightmare period.
Because
they've happened because of it.
Yeah.
And what happens then is your head level looks at this and logically says, well, hold on a minute. When you go with your intuition, you may get yourself into some serious scrapes, but hey, it all works out in the end. And what happens then is your head, what you think and what you feel intuitively, become the same, and the war stops. And it is such a different way of living your life.
Everybody has to, I think, and I mean, I've managed to find a certain, for myself, a certain amount of peace of mind that I never had when I was rushing around and trying to achieve this, that, and the other, all since I was ill. And to a certain extent, having cancer was a bit trite now, really, but it actually was good for my life. And out of all the things I go back on, you know, times that I thought, oh, this is terrible, and you look at it, and there were reasons for all of them. And everybody must benefit from all the terrible times. You are out of work, you haven't got a job, your house is being repossessed, or you bump the car, your kids are not doing well. Something that makes you address your entire life at that time, you know, is good. There's a reason for it in the scope of things. And you can't, until you get away from it, realize.
If everyone, at some point, earlier in their lives maybe,
would have been good at 20 to have this experience.
Was lying on their deathbed thinking they had 10 minutes to live. Right? If everyone had that experience, we'd live in a very different world.
Okay, let's get back to, because we've run out of time, let's get back to this fluoride thing.
Right.
We had a long discussion about that last night. You wrote something about it somewhere. That's what you're going to tell us, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, in this Alice in Wonderland, the World Trade Center disaster book, I introduced this. And one of the reasons I introduced it is because of additives to food and stuff, which are designed to suppress the sharpness of the mind, the brain, if you like. And, you know, I mentioned earlier about Rumsfeld being in a company that sold nuclear technology to North Korea, which he's now using to... for his propaganda, and he was involved in the chemical weapons and stuff to Saddam. What a lot of people don't realize, you ever come across this substance called aspartame?
No.
Aspartame. Well, it's 200 times sweeter than sugar, and it's in virtually everything now. Soft drinks that kids drink and all that stuff. It is terrible stuff. And it was forced through the Food and Drug Administration in America to give it permission to be used by Donald Rumsfeld. Donald Rumsfeld was the head of Searle Pharmaceuticals, who was brought in and made chief executive officer because of his very close contacts, fundamental contacts in the Reagan-Bush administration in the 80s. And they got permission for aspartame through as a result of Rumsfeld's manipulation when the independent data was saying it shouldn't be used. Searle Pharmaceuticals was then sold to Monsanto, the company involved with GM crops, and Rumsfeld made an absolute fortune. So
do you think America really thought we would have all accepted genetically modified food by now?
Again, what is happening with genetically modified food? The people...
Is it here or not? I tell you one thing.
The people don't want it.
You go to Europe, and you go to the little markets in the towns in Germany and Italy and France and all those, and the food tastes like it used to taste when I was young. Now, I don't know if that's a mental perception, but I'm pretty sure it's true. Because you can buy food over there from little allotment holders, and it tastes... It doesn't taste... If you buy a tomato here... Well, it doesn't taste of anything.
When you eat organic tomatoes, the difference in taste is absolutely staggering. It's like it's a different thing you're eating. But in GM crops, what we're looking at here, again, James, is our old friend the stepping stones technique. What they do is they have, quote, trials. And no matter how disastrous the trials get expanded, and then more and more of this genetically modified stuff gets into the air and starts affecting other crops. And this is exactly what's happening. And they just do it by the stepping stones technique until it becomes accepted. But this thing about the fluoride, this is a letter from a guy called Charles Perkins. He was a chemist, and he wrote the following to the Lee Foundation for Nutritional Research on October 2nd, 1954. And he wrote this, in the 1930s, Hitler and the German Nazis envisioned a world to be dominated and controlled by a Nazi philosophy of pan-Germanism. The German chemists worked out a very ingenious and far-reaching plan of mass control, which was submitted to and adopted by the German general staff. The plan was to control the population in any given area through mass medication of drinking water supplies. By this method, they could control the population in whole areas, reduce population by water medication that would induce sterility in women and so on. In this scheme of mass control, sodium fluoride occupied a prominent place. So this has been going on for a long time. And again, most people do not want fluoride in their drinking water, so it's introduced anyway. Most people did not want to go into the European superstate, but it's introduced anyway. We are in a dictatorship and have been for a long time. And the fluoride in the water is, again, a part of this. Now, when you look at people who have been advocates of fluoride in the water, especially a guy in America, in Canada rather, at Toronto University, he has actually come out now and said, hey, everything I've said is not true about fluoride in the drinking water, and for goodness sake, don't give it to babies because it's diabolical for them. And he points this out. Fluoride has been in drinking water in Toronto for 30 years or something. It's not in drinking water in Vancouver. Vancouver has fewer tooth cavities per head of population than Toronto, considerably fewer. It's supposed to be good for your teeth. Who says?
Okay, we'll take a break back after this.
The UK's best talk radio station, 1089 and 1053 AM. Talk Sport.
Okay, believe it or not, 3 hours with David Icke has passed almost like that. Nearly finished. That's very quick 3 hours, wasn't it?
It was all an illusion.
It was an illusion.
A dream.
We weren't really here. 0871 222 888. Joanna in London, John in Southport. We're going to come to you in a moment. David has something he wishes to share with us first of all. You'll be interested in this, Ash.
This is a quote I came across by Hermann Göring in Nazi Germany, who said this. So relevant to what's happening today. Why, of course the people don't want war. Why should some poor slob on a farm want to risk his life in a war when the best he can get out of it is to come back home to his farm in one piece? Naturally, the common people don't want war, neither in Russia nor in England, nor for that matter in Germany. That is understood. But after all, it is the leaders of the country who determine the policy, and it is always a simple matter to drag the people along, whether it is a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce the peacemakers for their lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in any country.
Okay, take that in, and next time we need to sort of motivate people, Ash, we'll use the same.
You need a scapegoat.
Yeah, you need a scapegoat.
You need a scapegoat,
and
exactly.
There are so many scapegoats around at the moment.
Well, there is one. The asylum seekers is the one at the moment,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, the asylum seekers is easy. It is so easy now if you want to get people motivated with asylum seekers. It is easy. All he's saying is what, of course, those of us in the media have known for years. If you want to get a reaction, you want to get people to sort of... what I really want people to do is people to actually... to have that reaction, but actually to think about how they're being manipulated.
Again, we come back to this question. If people just keep asking this question every day when these things are happening, who benefits? And invariably, who benefits is anyone that wants to take more freedom away, that wants to advance the war on terrorism, and wants to centralize power again
because
and again.
No human being you've ever met wants to fight. Nobody wants a war. Iraqis don't want to fight. Saudis don't want to fight. Palestinians don't want to fight. Israelis don't want to fight.
So you manipulate situations where you play one against the other, and then you cause them to fight.
The politicians want war because it gives them a power base.
Hey, I have got... This is a foolproof method, eh? I've got a way to end all war.
Mm.
anyone who declares war has to fight on the front line from day one.
Well, if the politicians were made to do the fighting, there would be no war.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
They get the fodder soldiers to fight it for them.
That's an interesting point my little friend over there makes. He said, you know, in the olden days, of course, it was the kings who used to lead their troops. And that wasn't so it was nasty and bloody and horrible, but it wasn't quite so difficult. And we were a little more ignorant in those days, Ash, weren't we?
We have a president that avoided the draft of Vietnam while supporting conscription for others by getting into the Texas Air National Guard in one day, which was absolutely unheard of, and that was his only way of not being drafted to Vietnam. Another person who supported conscription for others for Vietnam but got out of going himself was called Dick Cheney.
Mine, I wouldn't have wanted to go to Vietnam.
Exactly, exactly. But then don't support it for others.
Matrix.
Yeah.
Got a view on The Matrix, haven't you?
I think The Matrix movie is the greatest visual representation of this illusion we live in happen. I'm looking forward to, you know, where they go with it in the second one. But it's also interesting that, the people that wrote that understand the nature of reality. There's no doubt about that. And it's interesting that the person who is the hero, who eventually sees and realizes it's all an illusion, is called The One. And he's called Neo, which is made up of the letters of one. Mm. Because oneness, when we become connected to all that is again, that's when we start to observe this illusion and see it as an illusion. When we stop this disconnection that we have, when we're caught in the illusion of everything's disconnected, we ourselves are disconnected, we see the world is disconnected. When we actually get back in connection with the bigger consciousness, we then observe this world from that level of understanding, and we see a completely different world. In The Matrix, at the end, if you remember, when he reaches that point of self-realization that it's all an illusion and there is no death, and if he doesn't have the reality that he can die, then he can't, he doesn't see The Matrix as people and walls and anything anymore. He sees it as a series of mathematical codes, and that's basically what this world is. It's a series of frequency fields, and we turn those frequency fields into holographic illusions by observing them. I mean, how many people realize, I didn't know, but what we call particles that make up the physical world, they take two forms. One is as a particle, and one is as a waveform. They take both forms. The only time the waveform becomes particle form is when it's observed. When it's not being observed, it's a waveform. And as soon as it's observed, they have, what do they call it? The wave collapse. It becomes particle.
Okay.
It's all an illusion.
Couple more calls, which, illusion or not, they're here. Joanna in London, you're on the air at long last, through to David Icke.
Oh, hi. Hi, David.
Hello, Joanna.
It's a pleasure to speak to you.
Yeah, you too.
Hi. Hi, James.
Hi.
There's so much that I want to say, but obviously no time. But I was really interested in what you were saying about The Matrix, and also I feel that we have created panic. We've also blamed. All right. Now, you know, like when there's natural disasters, what do people first say? It's the act of God. Yeah?
Uh-huh.
Now, I think this is my truth. All right? God is love. All right? Without love, there is hatred and fear and separation. Now, if we all do love one another, we can reach to a much higher level. But apart from that, if you believe in God or not is beside the point. But I do, and I feel that everything that has happened now or will happen, God has seen it already. And even though these people who are the Illuminati think they're in control, they really aren't in control.
Yeah, I agree with that. But the concept of God, I think, has been a real means of controlling and dividing people, because so many of the religions have God, this God figure, as apart from the rest of us, and we kind of stand there and look up at God. Oh God, oh I'm down here, and then there's Jesus. Oh Jesus, I'm looking up to Jesus on a pedestal. And again, what it is saying is, I am not.
But religion is designed to control everyone.
Exactly. Once you start to realize that these concepts of God and all this stuff, there is one infinite consciousness of which we are all a part. And therefore, it's not someone up there and us down here. That's part of the division, part of, oh, I've got no power, I'm just Joe Public, you know, come on, Jesus, help me. We're actually the one consciousness also. And once you start to get that reality, the idea you do not have power to control your own destiny, the idea that you're going to give power away to some group of people to tell you what to think and tell you what to do, the idea that you're going to keep your mouth shut and your head down because you're frightened of what a few people might say about you, takes on a totally different concept, and you start coming into your own power instead of seeing yourself as ordinary Joe Public. What can I do?
Okay. Thank you, Joanna. Let's go to John in Southport. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hello. Hello, David.
Hello, John.
Hello, James.
Hi.
Just got a couple of questions. The first one is about something specific that was in the news a few years ago.
Yeah.
It was in the newspapers, but which I found very interesting. But then the story just seemed to disappear. It was about a group of scientists. I think they were working at government laboratories
right.
south of England. And this is actually reported in the mainstream press, and quite a few of them disappeared or died early, or I think two even committed suicide.
Yeah.
And the story ran for a couple of days, and then suddenly you think, where's this heading? And I didn't hear anything of it ever again, and I haven't for about 5 years. I just wonder if you know anything about that.
Yeah, I featured it in one of my books some years ago. Suddenly, people working in the same departments and working in very, very high-tech, advanced defense technologies, suddenly started dying. One guy left his meal, got in his car in London, drove to Bristol, and apparently threw himself off the Bristol suspension bridge when he had no connection to Bristol whatsoever. Another guy went missing one weekend, and he went missing for hours and hours and hours. And his wife eventually called the police because he said, I'm just going down to fill the car up with petrol. Never came back for hours. Eventually, he comes back, and the policeman is actually in the house with his wife. And he was asked the obvious question, where the hell have you been? And he made some kind of meaningless remark about, I just wanted some space and all that stuff. And his wife said that from the time he got back, he was not the same person. He was very strange. That Monday morning, about a day later, he gets in his car to drive to work to one of these defense establishments. He's driving down a dual carriageway, suddenly turns off, goes across the dual carriageway, back down the other side, and drives into a disused little chef building and blows himself away.
Yeah.
And you know, there were so many of these bizarre stories all happening to the people who were basically working in the same area. And like you say, there was stories about it at one time, and there was even a book written about it, but suddenly then it disappears. And this is one of the things, you know, that stops people getting the picture, is that there's so much, quote, news happening that even when something significant comes up, then other layers of other news suddenly take it over.
Yeah.
Margaret Thatcher said once that when she was involved in what she called toughing it out, in other words, when she was in trouble, basically what she said was, if you don't give in and you don't give way, pretty soon the headlines are going to be replaced by other stories, and people will forget about it.
Yeah,
well, and this is the way it kind of works. And you know, with the 911 book and about the official story, when you take all the official statements and you put them together as one,
a three-year-old can take the official story apart. It is insane. It is ludicrous. It is impossible. But the public do not get all those official statements linked together between two covers. They get the one on this day, one a week later, one a month later. And, of course, understandably, they don't put them together. And this is one of the ways that very significant information just gets replaced by the next day's headlines and it's forgotten about.
Yeah, I've got one other point.
Very quick, Dave, John, because we're running out of time.
Did you know that the symbol on the United Nations, which has laurel leaves around it, was also the symbol on the Waffen-SS insignia?
Doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, I think the laurel leaves were also the symbol of the of the Roman emperors as well.
Yeah,
John,
Rome was a major center for these Illuminati through history at the time of the Roman Empire. Yes, they moved from Babylon to Rome. That's why the Roman Church is a mirror of the Babylonian religion.
All right. John, thank you very much indeed. It's almost time for us to go. A couple of things here. This Martin in Oldham said, has it been noticed that the euro has now reached parity with the US dollar?
Well, as I've been writing for years, the idea is to have a single world currency. And the euro is not it. It is a stepping stone to it. They want to bring it all under one currency. Because as Mayor Amstel Rothschild said, the creator of the Rothschild banking dynasty, give me control of a nation's currency and I don't care who makes the laws.
And very quickly, Dave, because the music started, we've got to be out in a couple of seconds.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of the criticism I'm reading here about you is that your books are selling fantastically well, and that this, you're just making huge amounts of money out of this, more than you'd ever made out of television. But
I can hear the people that know me laughing as I speak. Of course, my books are selling increasingly well, but when you publish your own books, the costs of doing it are enormous. And if I was into this for the money, I would never have left television.
David, can't wait to see what revelations you make in the next year or so. Thank you very much indeed.
I'm on at the Brixton Academy June the 7th. 6 hours.
6 hours?
And hundreds of illustrations.
Mind you, 3 hours have gone quickly. Mark Green is next. I'll see you tomorrow night. Don't forget, davidicke.com. Thanks, David.
Thanks, mate.